Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. Today, we're once again joined by Rory Little, our resident expert on SCOTUS. He is currently a Joseph Kochet Professor of Law at UC Hastings in San Francisco. He has previously clerked for Justice Brennan and Stevens, as well as Justice Potter Stewart, and is a regular contributor to the SCOTUSblog.com. So Rory is joining us today to talk about the state of the Supreme Court amid the COVID-19 pandemic. It has affected pretty much everything, and every system in the criminal justice system has not been spared. And so Rory's going to walk us through what it looks like now. There was a lot of anticipation leading up to the October 2019 term, given their argument schedule. And now there's even more, I guess, excitement around it, or just a lot of attention around it as it's been affected by COVID-19. So Rory, can you tell us what happened to the argument schedule and what happens next?
Yeah, so this certainly is a term with a lot of big, important cases. And some of those cases were argued back in October when the term began. And normally the term runs oral arguments through April, and then the term is concluded by the end of June. And then, of course, we all had pandemic lockdown starting in March. The Supreme Court did something that was unprecedented, which is they canceled not just one, but 2 months of oral arguments. They canceled all the arguments in March, and then again, all the arguments in April, which would normally have been the end of the term. And that was a total of something like 20 or a little over 20 cases. And then they announced, surprisingly, that they would have 2 weeks of oral argument in May. We are currently in the second week of argument. There's still a couple arguments left to be made. They haven't had arguments in May for many decades, and they've never done live stream audio, and they've never done argument remotely by telephone, effectively. And that's what they're doing for these arguments in 10 different cases here over 2 weeks in May. They're arguing them remotely. The lawyers are in their offices. The justices are either in their chambers or at home. They are all connected by a hopefully secure audio process. And then they agreed to release the audio live stream. So in other words, you hear it as they hear it. So we've been able to hear little mistakes along the way, like somebody forgets to unmute their microphone. So the justices, in some sense, were yanked into the 21st century by this. And of course, they've always refused to live stream audio, and they've never allowed video. And of course, one of the questions now is, will they allow any of this to continue even after the lockdown process begins? It hasn't been since the Civil War that 2 months worth of oral arguments were canceled. And they've, of course, never done it remotely or live streamed it.
So let's talk more about the oral arguments remotely and what that's looking like. You said the Supreme Court justices are either in their chambers or they're at home. The attorneys, I assume, are also in their own homes or in their offices, and the clients are all in their own homes, respectively. Is that what it looks like at this point, or?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We don't really know what it looks like. So the justices haven't revealed exactly what they're doing.
Oh.
Well, presumably, we know they're connected by phone. In fact, Justice Breyer at one point was disconnected while the argument was happening. Justice Alito apparently was disconnected. There was an embarrassing moment last week where somebody who was online flushed a toilet that we could hear. It was either a justice or or a lawyer arguing.
The classic think it was a justice, Zoom,
but we
yeah.
don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
So well, even the Supreme Court hasn't been spared from those little mishaps of the teleworking world that we're in now, right?
Absolutely right. We're all familiar with this. The Solicitor General, for example, which is participating in, I think, 7 of the 10 cases, said that they were going to go argue in a conference room at the Department of Justice, standing at a podium and wearing their normal tuxedo called a morning coat. Both men and women wear sort of fancy clothes. And by the way, they're sitting around a conference table, which means theoretically, at least, they could pass each other notes. When you're in person, you're not allowed to pass notes to anybody who's arguing, except in extreme circumstances, says the rule book for the Supreme Court. you know, and then lawyers are wherever they happen to be. So if you're a lawyer in California, you're arguing in California. And if you're in DC, you're arguing in DC. Whether you're arguing at home or at your office, we don't know. Interestingly, none of the advocates, as far as I know, has posted a photo yet of what it was like to argue. And I think some people are interested to see that. And there's been a range of connections, right? Some of the connections have sounded pretty good and some of them have sounded pretty weak. We know Justice Ginsburg, for example, was hospitalized last week, mm-hmm. and yet she was released and participated in oral argument the next day, presumably from a sickbed while recovering from some procedure for her gallbladder. So it's kind of interesting to think about how they're doing this and what yeah. it's like. They have different styles. Justice Kavanaugh has very politely begun every comment with, "Thank you, good morning, Mr. or Ms. Smith. Now I can ask my question." Justice Thomas has asked questions in every argument because they're now going in seniority. They're not interrupting each other as they do in the live courtroom. And Justice Thomas has only asked a couple of questions in the last decade. And yet here he's participating fully, just like every other justice, actually asking some of the better questions. And now people realize, oh, maybe Justice Thomas really means it when he says he doesn't like to interrupt anybody. Now that he's getting questions sort of allowed by rule, mm-hmm. he's participating as much as every other justice. So there's very interesting, you know, this Chief Justice is trying to manage all this in terms of timing. Normally, it's a very lockstep system of an hour, 60 minutes for an argument. Every argument so far has gone well over an hour because it's hard to restrain people when you're in a Zoom call or a mm-hmm. Teams call or whatever. He's been pretty tough on interrupting people and going on to the next justice. He's cut off counsel, but still, the argument this morning, the first argument went about a little bit over an hour and a half, I believe. So presumably they'll get back on schedule when they're in person.
Right. So, and then the other parts of the court that are usually in place that also help regulate some of these things, is the anatomy of the court different in any way?
That's a very good question. So here's what we do know. The bailiff, as a woman, has introduced every oral argument just as she would if they were in court, except that there's a part of the standard beginning, you know, oyez, oyez, welcome to the Supreme Court, all persons gathered here, you know, pay attention. There's a part of that that says draw near and give your attention to the court. And that's been left out because, of course, you can't draw near. There's a gavel that is banged after she finishes her introduction. The Chief Justice has said the case is submitted at the end. Other than that, we know the Supreme Court building is closed, like all buildings, they're locked down. Most staff is operating remotely. The clerk's office is accepting everything electronically. There's no in-person filing, apparently. There's a little bit of gap in the rules about when you have to submit a hard copy and how. So there's some of the mechanics I know that have changed for some of the advocates, but for the most part, they seem to be running as regularly as they can in this situation. And again, most of it is behind the scenes. And until somebody tips us off as to exactly how things have worked, we're not going to know. So for example, we don't know who's actually running the telephone connection, who's securing the IT, who's making that all work between the justices, presumably. Somebody at the court is making very sure that nobody is hacking into these oral arguments the way some people were hacking at mm-hmm. Zoom conferences.
Yeah. So it is curious that they are choosing to live stream. And of course, it sounds like it's just an audio live stream, not video live stream. Is that correct, Rory?
That's absolutely right. And they're very much against video. They always have been. And one of the big questions will be, after this 2-week experiment basically is finished, will they continue to allow the real-time streaming of oral arguments audio, right, even if they're in the courtroom? Many people think, oh, maybe this will lead to video. Boy, it doesn't look like that. The justices have been firmly against this. Even Justice Kagan and Sotomayor, for example, who previously said things like, well, maybe we should allow the video. Once they got confirmed to the Supreme Court, they said, oh boy, now we sort of like our anonymity and we don't want video.
Yeah. So for our listeners, can you elaborate on sort of the reasons why they haven't allowed media or streaming of the arguments in the past and why that kind of points toward it won't become new precedent or if you think it points toward that.
Yeah, well, we don't know. I mean, clearly this experimental 2-week period of remote arguments that's being live streamed is going to be reviewed at the end. And one of the things they've often said is, we're afraid that media will just use sound bites. They will unfairly cut up the video to make us look worse than we are, or to embarrass us, or for, use it for political purposes. Interestingly, right, you can get the oral argument audio about 3 or 4 days after the arguments are finished. They're all available online. And so far, and that's been done for over a decade, you don't see people doing that. People are not cutting up the audio tapes and embarrassing the justices. Whether that would happen with video, we don't know. But I don't think that argument's going to hold up after this live streaming. There doesn't really seem to be a good argument to not live stream the audio now that they've tried it for 2 weeks. There haven't been any horrible glitches in these arguments. They've all gone off according to plan. Everybody's been very polite to each other. It's really as though they're still in the courtroom in some sense. The only problem is you can't see the expression on anybody's face. So I actually think the live streaming will, there'll be a very strong push to continue that. I don't think these justices are going to say, well, that means we can also do video. In fact, they'll probably say, gee, if we're live streaming the audio, you don't need the video. Nothing we do is visual. So video is not very informative. Live streaming audio is very informative. Let's just stick with that. So I think that's what's going to happen. And of course, they are hearing in these 2 weeks some of the biggest cases of the term. And so we won't know really how any of this has played out until the term is completely finished, which may not be until July sometime.
Can you clarify for our listeners, are there any arguments that were scheduled to be heard this term that will be pushed to next term that are canceled altogether due to the pandemic? Or are these next 2 weeks of remote arguments going to allow for every scheduled argument to be heard?
Yeah, no. So the answer is that there were a number of cases that were kicked over to next October or later. I can't remember the exact number. It might be 18 cases were kicked over. 10 were chosen to be argued last week and this week under this new process because the court viewed them, at least a few of them, as absolutely time sensitive. And so in some sense, a sooner decision is valuable to everybody. And so they did not postpone these 10 cases, but the ones they felt could be postponed without too much harm to anybody were kicked over until the term opens again in October. So for example, there's a case involving presidential electors, and their decision in that case could influence the presidential election that's coming in November. So they didn't feel that they could postpone that. There are two cases being argued on the 12th involving subpoenaing documents from the president. These are documents related to past conduct of the president prior to becoming the president, not held by the president, held by third-party document custodians, you know, banks and accounting firms. But they did not feel comfortable postponing that because, of course, the result in that case could also possibly influence the election. So a case that was argued this morning has to do with whether 43% of the state of Oklahoma is actually Indian territory. And everybody thinks, boy, they ought to get that decided as soon as they can because it's going to have some big consequences. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the cases that were argued this week were viewed as time sensitive. I think the cases that were argued last week, a couple of them were actually pretty obscure. I think they were chosen as the first couple arguments just to see how it worked. They didn't want to have a huge case where they ended up with a technological glitch that ruined the argument.
Right.
Those two cases, let me just say, went off without a hitch. So that part of the experiment worked in flying colors, and the technological side of the Supreme Court, they should feel very happy about.
Okay, well then go ahead and remind us of the timeline. I think you mentioned that it's expected that the term won't resolve until June or into July. Go ahead and refresh our memory on that. And then also, what should our listeners know as they try to keep up with this unprecedented term and just the remainder of the rest of the term?
Yeah, well, boy, no one's quite sure how the time's going to go. So normally the arguments would have finished by the end of April, and all the cases argued, unless there was a reason not to, they would be decided by July 1st. And that would be the end of the term. Technically, the term continues till the following October, but they would leave for various summer vacations and summer obligations at the end of June and not come back until the first Monday in October. Now these arguments are in May, so they are, you know, 2 to 3 weeks delayed from what they normally would be. And there's some very big cases up for decision. So people are now wondering whether they'll get it done by the 1st of July or whether they'll go further. How can you keep up with this? Well, SCOTUSblog.com is one of the places where I go for information. I write for them occasionally. There are some huge cases that are on the docket still to be decided that have already been argued. You know, do employment discrimination laws apply to transgendered persons or same-sex discrimination? That case was argued in October, still hasn't been decided. So they have some big cases to decide in addition to the cases that are being argued last week and this week. You know, there's an abortion case that was argued March 4th, right before the shutdown. That's going to influence the abortion debate. The DACA program we've all heard about for people who are the children of people who came into the country, can they stay or not? That's up for decision. That was argued back in November. So there are those big cases already trying to get decided. And then, you know, you have 10 more cases suddenly not ready for decision until May 15th, basically. So it's up for debate how long it's going to take. People want to pay attention to the newspapers and see what they see. The problem with the crush of cases at the end, let's just say you have 20 cases left to be decided, is that they come so rapidly, it's hard to keep up. And some cases don't attract media attention. You know, if the abortion case comes out on the same day as two other cases, the other two cases may not get nearly as much attention because the abortion case will kind of swamp the attention. So it's hard to keep up. I find SCOTUSblog.com to be the best source for current information.
Well, that and the Supreme Court summaries of the ABA criminal justice section, of course, right, Rory? Well,
right. If you want a less immediate but better review, you can listen to my review of the Supreme Court's term, you know, in July or August. Yeah. And you can come to the ABA annual meeting and go to the various programs we do, including one that I'll do on criminal cases.
Yes, I was going to say, you do host an annual review of the term. This year, it will be virtual, so that will be interesting to see how we adjust for that as well.
Yeah, but we're still trying to figure out how to do questions from the audience. We're working on that.
Okay, well, we will check in with you again after the term has resolved and get an update on the criminal cases. So thank you very much for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Just Pod.